I'm recording.
We hope.
Of course, I was recording last time, and a fat lot of good that did.
Yeah, well, I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
Oh, right.
Well, we can talk about that or the weather. I understand it is 90 and warm by you.
Oh, it's just glorious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the palms are just getting ready to flower. The plumeria smell lovely in southern Wisconsin in
December.
Mid-December. Yeah. Right now, I'm this time of year for our first snowfall, I always, never fails, I reconsider my life choices for turning down graduate school appointment in Honolulu.
Yeah.
For Wisconsin. That seems like I made a mistake there.
Yeah, but. I would question that on an, if not a daily basis, then an hourly one, perhaps.
Yeah, until you saw the fact that for married mainlanders, they gave you no housing assistance.
Ooh.
Yeah. And basically, our stipends would only cover our tuition. And our housing costs would have been more than our tuition.
Wow.
Right? So yeah. We're like, yeah, I don't tease.
But so, Honolulu.
Yeah, I know, right? I could have been a tropical horticulture.
Wow.
Sons of bitches.
Pineapples.
Anyway.
Pie is everywhere.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sad. We need to change
okay,
the subject.
Okay. I was going to say, tropical fruit hits me with that. I think it's astringency that just, I can't handle it. I don't know why. My tongue, like doesn't quite, I don't quite get an allergic reaction, but I get an inflammation.
Prickly.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's an enzyme, certainly with pineapples, and some like passion fruit has it too. That you have a reaction to that enzyme.
Yeah, I don't, prolase, something like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Yep, sure. Nice shot.
One
nice
of those.
Try.
I tried. Mm-hmm. I tried. Mm-hmm. Anyway, anywho, we are back once again on our usual Saturday morning complaining about the weather. Just can't get too far from that, can we? Okay.
Oh, my knee is just aching, and I got this thing in my back, and...
And what about that rash? Don't forget the rash.
Oh, the rash. Well, we don't want to talk about that.
Too late. Already did.
That's our other podcast.
Mm-hmm. Man, we have a lot of podcasts.
We do. Well, there it's all, you know, on the DL, so the dark web.
Oh, my. For both of you who are still with us. Uh-huh. Let's see. We've got a couple of detours this morning. So first we need our housekeeping. And we have a new patron Ken. Thank you, Ken, for joining
Hi,
us.
Hi, Ken.
Hey, Ken. We hope you're enjoying your hop-growing adventure, and welcome to the group. As we've told you many, many times, you know, jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/hapnology, yada, yada, yada. You know the drill. You're tired of hearing about it. Just, you know, shoot us some love through there and get involved in the community. It's loads of fun.
We did, for the hopnologists out there that have access to the Discord, we had quite the engaging discussion on what local means this week. And I found an extra soapbox to stack on top of the soapbox I was already mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. to give me a little bit more projection. But it was excellent, excellent conversation. I love that our patrons feel that they could challenge us and our positions with their own, which is why we have that. You know, we are not 100% right. We have a lot of experience, but the fact that they feel that it's a safe space where they can come in and say, this is how I see it. I disagree with you. Great. That's fine. But let's have a discussion on the topic and see if we can unpack it a little bit. So that was a good time.
It was great. I thought there was, you know, smoke coming out of your keyboard from the friction burns.
Yeah.
The amount that was coming out of there. It was good
stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's an awful lot to type with your thumbs on your phone, let me tell you.
Yeah. I've become a voice-to-text person, which explains some of the odd things that you might see posted and texted by me.
That makes sense now.
Mm-hmm. It'll start to become a little more clear.
Uh-huh.
I randomly walk around the house voice-to-texting things, and my children are just confused. Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, Patreon, you know it. You love it. Hop on. And let's see. So this week, we are going back to the new brewer It is the issue all about the hop reports, what's been growing, what's been purchased. So this is our segment that, of course, we always call We Read It So You Don't Have To.
Nice.
Yes. Now, speaking of which, I never got my paper copy this month. The online version of New Brewer came out maybe two and a half weeks ago now, and it never showed up.
Hmm.
And this is a numbers-heavy one. I had my pen, my highlighter ready, multiple colors. I was raring to go, and nothing. I got nothing. So I had to do all this, you know, on the PDF online, which is not my favorite way of dealing with these things.
You know, blame it on COVID like everything else.
Of course. Of course. I'm sure the magazine will show up in a couple of weeks, you know, torn up in a zippy bag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably with someone's can of wipes and their you know, some makeup remover and I don't know.
Maybe they're saving money and just reprinting it over last issue, so you're gonna have a double issue. Like, you know, we're giving you the content, but it's up for you to sort it out from the stuff we gave you last time.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. Maybe they're going to print it on toilet paper so it's multi-use.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Good idea.
Do us all a solid and get us some extra toilet paper out here. Oh, man, oh, man.
We need to start a new segment called Great Business Ideas.
and not lead off with this one?
And every other episode we drop, we could at the end be like, all right, for anybody listening, here's your next great business idea. And then just offer it up for free because we do that for the community.
And like the funny, you know what? It's not your worst idea today. Even.
Oh, wow, man, it's a good day.
Yeah, yeah. I can see. I can already see certain of our patrons listening to that and going, "Oh God, yes, please, please do that."
My wife is full of great strange ideas, so
mm-hmm.
I'll just have to take to jotting them down when she comes up with them throughout the week.
My kids also have plenty of them. Yes, I like this. Let's try this. Oh my. So this issue of the New Brewer, this is what gets under my skin. It's called the annual raw materials issue. Raw materials. Yeah.
But it's ingredients, right?
It's ingredients. It's, you know, the raw materials issue should be about, I don't know, building your greenhouse. It shouldn't be about what you're putting into your beer. Those are ingredients.
Well, yeah. So I think raw materials, I think of
nails,
packaging supply, like cans and all the other components. I mean, ingredients could be considered raw materials. I get it. But just to consider all raw materials ingredients, that's not appropriate.
It's not. And, you know, as far as the Brewers Association goes, this to me is a problem their audience are brewers. Mm-hmm. Their audience really fundamentally is not for growers. It's brewers. And if you're going to talk to your brewers about their raw ingredients, you're missing the opportunity. For us, it's an opportunity to talk about partnering with the farmers that are providing you with not only your hops, but your barley. That's also a big part of this month's issue.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of talking about them as your partners providing valuable ingredients, you know, they're a supplier. They're a raw material supplier. And that goes against everything we talk about in terms of the industry. So that just, you know, I love the Brewers Association, but that just ticks me off, the raw materials issue. I do not like that.
I'm with you.
So there. Now, leafing through the issue until I got to the World Harvest Report, I do want to point out there's an ad for a brewhose manufacturer, and they have their own blog. There is a brewhose blog, which just goes to show you that people will read anything.
That doesn't surprise me, with as critical as hoses and clamps and connectors and stuff are to the process. There's been more than one brewer I've had the pleasure of experiencing their diatribe on XYZ shitty hose in the brew house. So I could see how that could be a thing.
I guess it struck me as so funny. It's so nuanced. It's so niche, and it's important. I agree with you, but I cracked up because everyone's got something.
Mm-hmm.
There's something out there for anyone. So speaking of the people who are here, what's in it for them, it's hops. So let's talk about hops. The World Harvest Report is divided up into the U.S. and then everybody else. So, and we will touch on the foreign markets, but let's start with the U.S.
Okay.
So acres are up. 61,662 acres in the U.S. In 2019, up from 58.9. So that's 2,500 new acres.
And consider, I want to put that in a frame in people's minds, that mm-hmm. all of that acreage is pretty much controlled by 8 to 10 people.
Yes, yes, that is very true.
So it's, I have some comments there.
And when you take out the big three states and you go outside of that, Michigan's number four, 700 acres in Michigan.
Right. Right.
And that's the fourth largest state. So you can imagine what the top three produce. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, with acreage up, pounds are down from 113 million pounds. It's down to 106, which is actually the lowest it's been in 4 years.
Wow.
Not by a ton, obvious. Well, certainly by a literal ton, but.
Yeah.
But I'm bummed. But, you know, it's down a bit. And that has to do with a couple of things, just the pounds being down. So what does that mean? Pound, you know, acres are up, pounds are down, means yield is down, mm-hmm. average yield is down. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? So the way they were positioning the whole thing is that, of course, COVID was a problem. And COVID was a problem in an interesting way. It wasn't so much that there was a shortage of demand or anything like that, but we've talked before about labor.
Yep.
And we said this back in, I don't know, April or May. We talked about the fact that, yeah, this is going to impact your ability to get your hands on bodies to mm-hmm. get the harvest done. And they didn't stress that it was hard to get bodies, but they stressed the cost of those bodies.
Right.
So the H-2A guest worker program, has certain requirements in it. You must provide transportation for your workers. And now transportation means more runs with fewer people in order to have distancing. You have to provide housing for them, which also extra expensive during COVID because you're having to spread people out. You have to segregate your blocks of workers. So you have to have, you know, you probably would have had shifts before, but now you're talking about something much more regimented than it used to be in smaller groups. And then you need extra people to cover for those who are sick. Mm-hmm. You need to have extra folks on hand. Then you've got all the other costs of hand washing stations and more toilets and PPE and all these other costs of production that were already the most expensive part of your operation.
Yep. And if people have ever experienced, you know, working with H-2A labor, and the housing they provide for them is akin to, in many cases, a detention facility. Now some growers, you know, treat their H-2A quite well, but I mean others that I've seen, and not just amongst hops, but in other cropping systems, it looks like a gypsy camp. I mean, they will absolutely have a house that, you know, is for, you know, reasonably comfortable, a 6-person family, and have 25 people in it.
Wow.
Because, hey, it's a house, right? And mm-hmm. there you go. But woefully undersized for the number of people that are in it. And then throw COVID in there, and now people are starting to pay attention. You know, authorities are starting to pay attention to how you're treating those H-2A workers, what you're supplying them with. Now it's like, oh, crap. All right. Bring in more trailers. And there's a big trailer shortage this year just uh-huh. because of that. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all just compounds upon itself. Because to your point, I mean, they were already too crowded together. You want to separate them for health reasons. But if you don't, if you skirt the rules and then someone in that ridiculously overcrowded house gets sick, then they're all sick. And then you got nobody.
You got nobody on top of whatever penalties you're going to get for violating your COVID regulations, on top of violating your H-2A regulations. Mm-hmm. So it just completely compounds itself. And that cost has to go somewhere.
Yep. And it goes to you, yep. Mr. Brewer.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Already the most expensive ingredient. Oh, should I call it a raw material? See what I did there.
Yes. We all saw what you did there. Thank you for that. Yeah.
So let's already compound the embodied energy and the cost in your most expensive raw material.
Yep. Make it all that much worse. So that certainly contributed to the yield reduction. And then you've got also out on the west coast of the U.S., you had wildfires.
Oh, yeah.
Which were, you know, a very large problem in terms of the ability to get to the crop. I don't know of many stories of crops burning to the ground, but you really had a difficult time being out there to do any harvesting, certainly. And you had labor issues due to that. They made an interesting comment that I wanted to get your perspective on. They talked about smoke taint. Mm-hmm. And the fact that smoke can imbue the flavor and the quality of the hops, and that it's a big problem for grapes, since that's also wine country. But the claim from the new brewer was that hasn't been noticed to be a problem with hops, that the smoke doesn't impact, you know, aroma. But of course, they haven't brewed with these hops yet.
Maybe they're onto something. Maybe they've got a new market. Smoked hops are actually a thing. I mean, that's historically it's been a thing. But I would agree with them. If you're comparing it to grapes, which I don't know why people insist on comparing hops to grapes in their horticulture, it drives me insane. But, you know, grapes are the basically 90-some percent of the wine that's being produced. So if that feedstock is tainted or contaminated with some other flavor or aroma, yeah, it's going to carry through. Hops are less than 3% of the overall ingredient bill in beer. So even if they were smoked out, the likelihood of having that character carry over into a beer that you would notice would be minuscule to none. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, James, you just said they make smoked hops for him. Like, yes, they do. And you can do that, but you've got to be, you know, how you use it in the brewing process is important. I don't see there being an issue with smoke taint. Having in the final beer, might it be noticeable in like hop rub selections? Maybe. Because our nose is extremely finely tuned to that kind of stuff. But whether it carries over into the finished beer or not, I don't think so.
But that's very interesting what you just said, because if you've got someone who knows their hop rubs, like a Dan Carey, he's going to smell that and go, yeah, I'm going to pass. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So it's never going to make it into his beer.
Potentially, yeah. Unless he doesn't have a choice. Right?
Yeah, if that's all there is.
Then you're going to roll a dice. But I don't see it being a big issue.
I want to take a pause here and say that we need a name for this new character. You know, we have the name for our harvester. We have the name for our generic server. This character of yours who goes, but James, you just said. That character needs a name.
Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin works.
Kevin. Or Gary?
No, not Gary. No.
Kevin.
Yeah. We can go with Kevin. Kevin rolled off the tongue really quickly there. This must resonate with someone for you.
Well, I keep thinking of the Karen. So people are calling male Karens Kevins.
Okay. That works. Okay. So that is Kevin. Kevin says.
Yeah.
All right. One last thing that impacted yield that was very specific to the Pacific Northwest. There was a huge Labor Day storm with heavy winds. Ugh. And they were talking about 5 to 10% losses due to this one storm right at harvest time.
Yep.
That, you know, prevented you from harvesting and just knocked a bunch of crap down.
Oh yeah. That of everything that we've talked about, that makes the most sense for yield loss, because that's the worst time to do it. But it's going to be yield loss within a specific variety band based on what's harvesting at that time.
Ah.
So you're not going to see it across all varieties. I mean, net, you're going to look across it and say, yeah, we did have a reduction in yield, but I would expect to see that in just a few varieties that happen to be harvesting in that area at that time.
Hey, with any luck, it hit the Cascades, and that price can go up just a tad.
Yeah, they could not harvest Cascade for 3 years, and the price wouldn't go up. I was thinking more like, yeah, you know what? If just happened to blow down all the Citra acreage, I wouldn't be crying about that. But.
Yes, that's true. A lot of double IPA lovers would be, however.
Whatever.
They would be super sad.
Yeah. Kevin crying in his beer.
All right. So that is our yield story in terms of what's gone on this year. And so, you know, pounds are down, acreage is up. It's all good. But let's talk about the varieties that are out there. So these are, you know, varieties being grown. Not varieties being used. We'll get to used, but varieties being grown. And number one, 3 years in a row, of course, as you just said, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Gur.
Mm-hmm.
18% of the acreage out there is Citra.
Jesus.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And then the next 10% is CTZ.
That just surprises me because of the... It's a bittering hop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it, pure and simple. I guess you got to get your alpha from somewhere, right? And you might as well get it from something that has got a lot of it and really doesn't have a whole lot other character besides that if you put it in the boil. So, okay. I think Nugget's a far better hop for high alpha and bittering than CTZ, but whatever.
And it's not only is Nugget not on the list, I'm looking going back to 2016 at the top 10. It's nowhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a shame. Number three, why don't you guess?
Number three?
Yeah. So Citra CTZ, what's next in the ground?
Mosaic.
Yeah, bingo, Mosaic.
Mm-hmm.
9% of the acreage is Mosaic. Then we've got Simcoe is number four. And Cascade is still there. Cascade's number five.
Mm-hmm.
Cascade was number three the prior 2 years. And it was number one the prior 2 years before that. So Cascade is falling pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm. But there's so much acreage out there of it that it's going to take a while to work through it.
There's still 4,000 acres of Cascade.
Yep.
Which and is then, nothing to sneeze at.
Just like what happened with Willamette is Willamette went to almost valueless when InBev canceled all their contracts with growers for their Budweiser and stuff that had Willamette and Nugget in it. So they canceled those contracts. That acreage plummeted. The value of the hop on the market went to a dollar something, $2, like where Cascade is, maybe $3. And then like 4 years later, people are paying $16 a pound on the spot market for Willamette because everybody yanked it out of the ground. So this whole wide vacillation just drives me insane.
It's nuts. And yet, at the same time, we tell our smaller growers, you got to watch the market. You've got to only grow what you think you can sell.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it does pay to tear things out and start over again. But so frustrating to chase the market and chase the trends. And we could go into a whole conversation about brewing and why can't brewers be more creative with what's out there rather than chasing the new hop. And that's a whole nother conversation that we will have and continue to have.
Of course.
So let's see, that's Cascade. So that rounds out the top five. Then you've got Centennial. I always pronounce this next one wrong. Pato, Amarillo, Chinook, and then El Dorado has poked its way into the top 10, knocking Summit out. So, you know, those top 10 represent 51% of the acreage.
Wow.
And then you've got another something like 150 varieties out there.
So we had Centennial, Cascade, and CTZ in there as the open market varieties?
I think Chinook is as well.
Oh, Chinook. Yep. Chinook is in there. So four out of the 10.
Four out of the 10.
Are open source. Everything else is proprietary.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, it is.
So much for brewers thinking that they're counterculture and sticking it to the man and independent. They're not. They're completely beholden to, is it two companies that own the rights to all those varieties?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it is too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well done.
Oh, grr.
Just, you know, because I'm a prick like that. Just thought I'd point that out.
funny.
See what this snowy weather does to my attitude? I mean, it was already bad to begin with, but damn.
Do you really think you sound any worse than you usually do?
Oh, maybe not.
I mean, no, not in the slightest.
All right, good. I'm glad to know that I'm having a buoyant, happy day then.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're giving yourself too much credit or not enough. It depends on what you're going for.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So, but you know, to put some of that in perspective, and I'm going to ask a stupid question that you're going to need to answer. A hectare which I know I'm pronouncing wrong.
Hectare.
Mm-hmm. Hectare. That's what, 1.3 acres? Am I remotely close
to that? It's almost two.
It's almost two.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got the Germany numbers in front of me as well. And there is, so if that's almost 2 acres.
Just multiply it by two to get you in the rough region for acres.
Okay. So there is the, Pearl is the, in terms of the aroma varieties, mm-hmm. Pearl is the biggie, followed by Hollow Sour. And there are a couple different versions of that. But Pearl's doing about 6,000, what we'll call U.S. acres,
mm-hmm.
which is just a hair under what CTZ's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So varieties, the more traditional varieties, they are out there. They are available. They're just not being grown here.
Right.
It doesn't mean you have to not use them. For the love of God, brewers, use some classic noble varieties.
Please.
Yeah.
And that's purely because of the regionality, right? They just don't grow well here.
Sure.
They tried with, you know, having a Perla grown here, which we grew, which it did okay. But certainly like out in the PNW and places like that, that were trying to find noble type hybrids that they could grow. I mean, that's where like Willamette came from and Sterling and all that kind of stuff is substitutes for like Fuggle and Saws. But maybe if you need those or want those varieties, maybe look to your non-traditional hop growers because we can grow them in different regions of the country. And don't forget about them.
Yeah, yeah. They've clearly got a market if they're being grown in that volume.
Oh, yeah.
Overseas.
Yep.
And it's so interesting to me, and it might be more about the authors of these different articles, the U.S. versus the global article, or it might say something more about the culture, the growing culture and the brewing culture over there, but they separate their measurements, their hop measurements, into the aroma varieties and the bittering varieties,
mm-hmm.
which I just found to be so interesting that they took them as two different product lines very strictly. And I think a lot of the proprietary stuff here is dual purpose, which is probably why. But it's interesting to see they've got Perla, I think you pronounced it Perla, Hollertauer, Herbstbrucker, and then Tet as being about almost 70% of the aroma varieties. And that's about 16,000 acres, if I do my math correctly,
mm-hmm.
in Germany. And then from the bittering side, it's Hercules, Hollertauer, Magnum are the big ones. They're about 90%.
Yeah.
Of what goes on the bittering side. So, and Hercules, am I correct? That's a relatively new one. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's in the last 10 years or so, I think.
Okay. And that's taken over in terms of bittering
for
Germany. I just think it's interesting how they look at those a little bit differently than we do. But, you know, other varieties out there, not everything has to be a Citra bomb.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Take that to heart, especially given the input that we had from the diversity episode about women beer drinkers looking for crisp and clean and mm-hmm. really basically the middle-aged guys are the ones that want tropical fruity and juicy and dank. Get over yourself.
Ugh.
Women are right. Listen to them.
Is it okay that I hate all of the adjectives that have come out in the last 5 years? Not just for beer, just all of them. All
just
the words
general.
My kids use too. I don't like any of them.
It's fine.
No. Just that's the other podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the other thing about the World Hop Report, I will say, which I found fascinating, and again, I think it's a cultural thing, is that the U.S. Hop Report was really based around the market. Here's what's going to sell, and here's, you know, growing what the brewers want, and da-da-da. And the World Hop Report was so much about the weather. Literally month-to-month descriptions of what was going on with the weather and how it impacted yield. Temperatures, precipitation measurements. Here's a line from one of the German growers, cone color this year is not uniformly bright and shiny green, largely due to a late infestation of powdery mildew. The cone size in most varieties is a little larger than normal, especially in the earlier varieties. Broken cones and loose petals were more prevalent. Like, there's nothing like that being described on the U.S. side. It's, woohoo, Citra, filling up my back to my car with lots of Citra and driving it down to the local watering hole. Like, I don't know. The focus on the scientific growing aspect, And again, it might just be the author of the article, but that was so much more engaging to me to read than the same old thing that I could have read on any brewing or homebrew website out there.
I think it's indicative of the American agricultural model. It's about yield. It's about numbers. And we have, as best as possible, as much to our within our control as possible, tried to turn that agriculture into a manufacturing industrial operation. If you, you know, the acreage, the farms are thousands of acres, not all of them, but many of them. And if you look elsewhere, they're not. They're much smaller. You know, I think the average farm size in let's just call it Bohemia, is what, 20 hectares, 40 acres? I mean, it's small. So, and maybe even smaller than that, which is why there was all these Wolf 140s and 170s over there, because it fit the farm size. And so those folks are also dealing with a longer heritage, I think. I know. They're very, very much stuck in the this is how we do it mode. So they're more prone to talk about how heavily the weather affects them, because many of them and most of them are not under irrigation. Whatever Mother Nature gives you, that's what you get. And as climate is changing, it is changing. So look at the yield numbers and the chemistry numbers from Germany and the Czech Republic over the last 10 years. And they are being massively impacted by the shifting climate, which they never had to deal with before. They never had to irrigate because they always had plenty of water at the right times. Well, not anymore. And mildew infestations, they're going to have more insect problems, and things they've never had to deal with agronomically are now going to become a problem. So I think we can expect to see a decline and shift in production areas and techniques in the coming years.
Very interesting. And especially given those, you know, I think about Germany, given the cultures and how many generations they've been doing this for, how open will they be to trying new things that aren't the way, you know, Grandpappy did it?
The Germans? I want you to think about that a little bit longer in your head, and then you give me the answer. Okay. What do you think? Right, the German government provided German hop growers with gajillions of euros to put irrigation in because they knew it was going to be a problem. And guess who did it? Who took them up on it? Like nobody. Mm-hmm. Because why would they? That's just stupid. Oops.
Yeah.
Guys, what the hell?
Oh, that's not good.
Well, they don't want to be like us Americans, apparently. So.
Well.
I don't blame them.
No, I get it too. Oh, well, we'll have to watch and see what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the other markets that are interesting because they're growing so rapidly, Australia is up year mm-hmm. over year. 60% of what they grow is Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
It's just big old Galaxy factory down under.
They've got their own variety. They're going to ride it for all it's worth.
I might as well. Mm-hmm. And then New Zealand had a record year, 1,200 metric tons, which is 18% growth, which is fantastic. And the vast majority of that is just due to yield increases. It's not due to new acreage.
Yep, I could see that hop revolution coming on. I mean, they technically had their acreage in the ground last year, so they're not really increasing their acreage. But it's finally coming into age for yield, so I wouldn't at all be surprised if most of that increase is just coming from that single company.
That's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. And then 80% of their hop production in New Zealand gets shipped out of New Zealand. It's going elsewhere.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, I think they have a lack of breweries is what that tells me.
No, they don't. They have plenty of breweries. It's just that the brewers in New Zealand are not hurting for New Zealand hops. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. They can have as many hops as they want out of that, and they get the choice of stuff, frankly. But they're just not – their volume isn't as big as what there is in the United States and,
sure.
and Europe and Asia, obviously. So it's not that big of a country, guys. So
yeah,
that's a lot of hops sense. For that small of a country.
And they also managed to thread the needle on COVID. The lockdowns didn't hit there until after their harvest, because remember, we're talking about different seasons. And as they head back into their new season, they did such a tremendous job during their lockdowns that they're basically COVID-free at this point.
Right.
So they managed to completely avoid the pandemic in terms of an impact on production, whereas we saw an impact in 2020, and we're likely going to see an impact at least at the start of 21 as well here.
Yeah.
So, you know, good going New Zealand. They're going to continue to grow.
Well, and I know that the folks in New Zealand are being impacted by COVID because they're still doing social distancing, and they've got to be very mm-hmm. careful now that they're not quite halfway into their season. So it's still a thing. They're,
oh, sure.
they're just catching the back end of it. Hopefully. Yep. Hopefully it's the back end.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully. This whole thing's been a back end. But
there's that. Yeah.
But bum. All right. Quick story about new hop varieties before we get into actual hop usage. There was an article on new hop varieties. We won't go deep into it. A lot of it had to do with breeding, but I just had to share this line because it's us. And the opening line to the article is Contessa, Nectaron, Harlequin, Talus. Those are not the names of characters in the next Marvel movie.
I was going to call them stripper names, but
okay, that's and that could be it as well. No, those are some of the up and coming new hop varieties.
Wow.
But yes, I'm picturing all of them with Thor. It just
right?
makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The names.
And the other thing in that article that would just make you angry, because I always like kind of, you know.
Making me angry, yes, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is there was a raw materials manager at a particular very large regional brewer, who I will not name, who listed, you know, if you were engineering a hop variety, what would the perfect characteristics be?
God.
And one of those characteristics was it should be quick to dry in a kiln.
Yep. Just like hardwood lumber and corn, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I want to put my delicate flowers, in a kiln with my pottery. Yes.
Oh, I read that and I circled it in red pen on my printout of my PDF Brewers Association. Get me my freaking paper copy, please. And I knew that would be a nice hot button for you.
Yeah, so. Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. Take a Tums. I'm sure that made a little something come up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And to cap it off, they talk about, of course, hop usage. So this would be, you know, they surveyed in 2020 to get an idea for what was done in 2019. So you're going back a bit here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the top 10 are very similar. Cascade's actually number one again in terms of volume being used, which is surprising. But there's so much of it out there, I think, in brewers' freezers is part of the issue. You've got Cascade, Centennial, Citra, Mosaic, Simcoe. Chinook is number six. So Chinook's got some use.
Nice.
El Dorado, Amarillo, Crystal, Magnum. So is it just Cascade, Centennial, and Chinook there that are non-proprietary?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah. God. That's frustrating. That is frustrating.
Well, I mean, it's not like we didn't know. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, we have an idea, we understand, but when you get it so distinctly pointed out to you.
Mm-hmm. So the thing about their survey this year, and I know I've mentioned this to you already, that was very frustrating is that the number of respondents dropped dramatically. So in 2018,
is this the caveat to all the data you're giving me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So all this is rather than give it all to you and then say, by the way, it's all crap, I'm going to tell you what's crap ahead of time.
Okay. Good.
So in 2018, there were 252 respondents to the survey. In 2019, 145 respondents. You know, it went down, but it's still a substantial number of respondents. 49 breweries responded this year. And there, it's funny, at the end of this article, several pages in, it says, well, the numbers are down, and so we know that's a problem, but a lot of small breweries that were impacted by COVID either were just too busy to respond to the survey or weren't even open to respond to the survey. And what you got to do then is think about these numbers and how they would be biased if they were only being answered by larger breweries.
So how many? 47, you said?
49.
If I say, if we say.
A third of last year.
I know, but just in total. So if we say 7,000, let's just say 7,000 breweries in the U.S., craft breweries. And let's say half of them are members, 3,500. And only 49 responded.
Yeah.
That's like...
half a percent. It's 2%?
1.4% does not make a population sample size.
No, no, it does not. It absolutely does not. And of course, the things that changed from last year, I remember last year I was complaining about this, that the pounds of hops per barrel, it was up. It had been 1.5, 1.55, and it went jumped to 1.7 pounds per barrel was the hopping rate last year. I remember you and I going bonkers on the fact that, oh God, it's all these double IPAs and triple IPAs and over hopping. And then you took us down a sciencey science rabbit hole about the fact that there is a point where you can add more hops and it doesn't do anything. You hit maximum velocity, so to speak.
Right.
Terminal velocity is the phrase I'm looking for, where the additional all the addition is doing is giving you more shit to filter out when you're done.
Pretty much. Yep.
But now that number is down from 1.7 pounds per barrel to 1.45, and they're making a big deal about it, about, you know, less that people are using extracts and cryo hops. Well, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You're also taking out these little breweries that are, you know, very often your larger breweries have a mix of product. Some of it, I've seen plenty of the little guys, the nanos and the craft breweries that are IPA factories.
Yep.
And they have to be skewing the results.
Oh, completely. And again, what's your sample size and who's actually responding to your data, you know, questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And so you gave us all of this information and we went through this whole episode and then you at the very end, you're like, oh, by the way, the sample size is too small. So all this is crap.
Oh, no. This is just for the hop usage at the very end. All the pounds grown and all that at the beginning, that's all legit.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Okay.
Because that's got to be registered.
Right.
I mean, that's all real.
Okay. Just
this
clarifying.
No. Mm-hmm. Just the end here. Just the end. And the other piece that I thought was interesting here was number of varieties used by respondents. And last year it was up to 163 different varieties. Hmm. So when you think about the numbers we talked about earlier and the fact that, what was it, 51% of the hop production in the United States comes out of five varieties, but there are 163 varieties in use. Oh, man. Talk about a bountiful collection of different ingredients you have to choose from. And, oh, man, experiment. Play with all this neat stuff that's out there.
So much for being creative and inventive brewers. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. The next time I see creative and citra in the same sentence, no. Or creative and marshmallow in the same sentence, I can't.